In the HLA lab, we have our finger in all of the transplant programs. So everyone, comes to us and we have conversations. And you're saying there is great advances in all the programs for in lung and liver and heart and kidney. Everyone is pushing the boundaries, and it's really great to see and be a part of that.
Welcome to the Living Transplant Podcast, where we take you behind the scenes of the Ajmera Transplant Center at Toronto General Hospital, Canada's largest and most comprehensive transplant program, performing over 700 transplants annually. I'm your host, Candice. Each episode, we share the powerful stories from transplant recipients and living donors, along with insights and education from leading medical professionals. Today, we're diving into the hidden world of transplant immunology, the science behind matching donors and recipients and helping transplanted organs last as long as possible. Joining us is Jeff Kiernan from UHN's HLA lab, where critical behind-the-scenes work helps determine compatibility, monitor antibodies, and support patients through every stage of the transplant journey. From highly sensitized patients to the future of personalized matching, this episode breaks down the science shaping the future of transplant. Here's my conversation with Jeff Kiernan. Please enjoy. Welcome, Jeff. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. We're really excited to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be able to, think about HLA people and transplant. Is anyone that'll listen for us to talk about HLA, we're happy to fill their ears. And, it's nice to have a larger audience to be able to, explain a little bit more about what we do, because we're, kind of tucked away in the hospital. Not a lot of patients see what we do, but it's nice to be able to, enlighten the world on the world of transplant immunology and what we're doing down there up in the HLA lab.
Amazing. And this is such a fascination for me, both, working in the transplant world, but as a patient, as a transplant recipient, it is fascinating to me to think about all that goes on in your lab. I know a lot of the terminology just from being part of that. But for listeners who are new to this space, I'm wondering if you can walk us through what HLA is, what matching is, why it matters, kind of, an HLA 101 for our listeners.
Sure. I get this question a lot from the public. And so HLA is essentially cellular ID tags. So there are numerous different markers on the cell that all tend to identify, help the body determine what belongs inside and what is foreign. So your immune system is trained to identify any of these foreign ID tags. And it's what basically tells the immune system, this shouldn't be here. This is not our body. This is not part of us. And then mount an immune response to eliminate or get rid of that foreign invader. It developed to get rid of bacteria and viruses and other foreign things. But, kind of a side effect of that is it also is trained to eliminate foreign organs and tissue that comes into our body. So when your immune system encounters other HLA of the organ graft, it will then mount an immune response. Immune suppression drugs that are standard for patients that have received organ transplant will tend to blunt this immune response, but not entirely delete that, remove that chance. A person, compliance is such an important thing about staying, keeping the, taking their medicine and trying to do what as much as we can to keep our immune response from identifying these foreign ID tags and mounting immune response. But there are sometimes that immune suppression at the current standing level is not enough, and we will need to do, augmented immune suppression. So getting routinely tested. We always test for these immune tags, these HLA antigens, they're called. This is the more scientific term. So, checking if someone has an antibody against these HLA antigens is part of your routine post-transplant follow-up, more frequently in that first year post-transplant, and then, still present in that longer time outside of transplant. We keep an eye on things and make sure that the person doesn't develop these HLA antibodies over time.
Right. Amazing. And, you know, we hear so much during the testing phase, especially, is, you know, how do we find the match? How do we get the match? Like the word match, and people are often assuming that they need this quote unquote perfect match to have a good organ transplant and to keep that transplant viable for, you know, these people we've heard about who have 25 plus years. Can you explain, you know, having a perfect match and why maybe that's not the goal, but what the goal in this HLA process is?
Right. Yeah. So you know, the term perfect match, you know, a lot of times that's associated with a stem cell or bone marrow transplant. Mm. And that's because for that type of transplant, you need that perfect HLA match where the donor HLA matches the recipient, you know, almost perfectly as possible. But that's because you're transplanting the immune system, basically. So you know, when you're putting a new immune system into a person, it has to be as close to the old immune system as it can, or else you'll start to reject the host. That's where graft versus host disease, and you know, you've probably heard about that, mm-hmm. is a big problem in stem cell bone marrow transplant. For solid organ transplants, you know, there are benefits, you know, if you do find that perfect match, which does happen if people get a kidney or a, you know, a liver from their HLA match sibling. If you have a sibling, there's about a 1 in 4 chance that you will have the same HLA as that sibling. So we know from a lot of, you know, large data sets that patients who have an HLA matched all solid organ will do better over the long run. Okay. At the population level, it's a longer. That's because there is that, you know, not much difference for the immune system to get angry about.
Okay.
Typically, in solid organ transplant that we're talking about, when we're talking about a good match, we're talking about avoiding antibodies. So find a donor and the recipient does not have anti-HLA antibodies. So an individual over the course of their life can develop these anti-HLA antibodies through various methods. That's, you know, previous transplant, transfusion of red blood cells or platelets, or pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So by those three sensitization methods, a person can, or sometimes they don't, but sometimes they would have anti-HLA antibodies. Mm-hmm. So in the pre-transplant testing phase, you know, we test these and we see, we'd have a good idea. We know, you know, how many antibodies a person has. We can kind of give an estimate of what percentage of the population that person would reject against. It gives the programs an idea of how long the wait time would be and give them kind of an idea of how transplantable they are. So, but the match that we need is, you know, we have all this anti-HLA antibody information that we generate in the HLA lab. That all goes into Trillium, to their organ allocation software. When a donor is identified, you know, the donor comes to us or one of the other four HLA labs in the province, and we will do the HLA testing on the donor to identify, you know, what HLA molecules, what ID tags they have. And then that goes into OATS, and then the allocation process would then, you know, based on wait time and when it's your time to get an organ, it will then, you know, run a check to make sure that you don't have any antibodies against the HLA of the donor. So that's, you know, for a solid organ, that's a perfect match as far as like what's necessary for to receive a solid organ transplant.
Okay.
After the transplant, you have the chance of developing HLA antibodies against the donor, that graft you've just received, which is, you know, it is normal. It's, you know, it is part of, you know, it is quite common, and not, you know, it's not the end of everything. You know, there's a lot of ways that we can manage that, and a lot of tools at our disposal. But if you were to then go and, you know, let's say you were to need another graft, you know, 15 years down the road, you know, you have had those HLA antibodies from that first one, and we need to keep that in mind when it comes time for your second or third or fourth organ transplant.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I always say that I have the trifecta because I had a kidney transplant from my mom. Prior to that, I had several blood transfusions because of my health. And then I have a 5-year-old daughter, so a pregnancy as well, right? So I always say, whatever the nephrologist tells me, I'm going to do, because I am stacking my odds, you know, the more time stacking my odds against finding a second kidney donor, right? So these thoughts, I think, come into our minds as patients, you know, when we think about second transplants and things like that.
Yeah, and it's excellent that that you're educated on that and educating others on that and the reasoning behind that. It's hard to tell someone, you're very hard to transplant, but understanding why that is, I think is helpful. So.
Yeah. Now, I recently read an interesting article and thinking about transplant immunology. There has been changes recently, and there's been lots of changes and upgrades in healthcare. And often we think that it takes forever for changes to be made in healthcare, but really, it's been like a pressure cooker. I feel like for the last 40, 50 years of the amazing change that has come about, and that's why I love this podcast because we get to showcase a lot of those really cool innovation. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what makes this moment feel different in transplant immunology from even a few years prior.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. So, whenever I go to quite a few conferences on transplant immunology and transplant conferences, and the big theme over the year has been this molecular matching. So when you mentioned about the perfect match, and in the current, the algorithms for the transplant that have, that have happened over the course of the several decades, wait time is the big one, time on dialysis, ABO blood group, a lot of these other factors that dictate when a person will be getting the organ. We're just trying to, we're trying to keep things fair and the equity piece. For that is, you've waited on dialysis for 5 years, and it's time for you to get an organ,
right?
And with organs being the kind of the primary dictator of transplant activity, that makes sense that you shouldn't have to wait longer because you're harder to match. We are finding that with the advent of some new understanding of the formation of antibodies, how people will form antibodies against HLA that doesn't look like their own. Better and stronger and easier than they do against their own, then this sort of molecular matching piece takes a little bit of the spotlight, saying that the closer you are to your donor, the less likely there is of a HLA antibody being mounted, just because you're closer, not necessarily perfectly matched, but you're a closer match than than you would be if it was just completely not molecular matched. There's another piece, so that's called HLA matchmaker. There's something else called PERCH, which is an algorithm which looks at how the recipient's immune system sees the donor. And, there's a lot of really complicated science to get into to how the immune system presents that donor proteins to the immune system. And that has a lot of basis on the recipient's, the host's own immune system and how presentable it is. One, if you have two donors, that are, somewhat equal as far as like ABO and, all the other, other factors, based on the HLA, the recipient might be able to present one much better than the other. The better a recipient can present that donor, the more likely or the higher the chance of generating an immune response. So I guess the less presentable, the less visible that the donor is to the recipient's immune system, the better. So that would be a lower score on that. So there's these new tools, and this is kind of just the tip of the iceberg, but as we're getting more information on these and how important they are, but also looking at more of the how to keep the equality piece and the equity in place while also improving the post-treatment, because this better match would lead to over time longer survival.
Right.
You could even possibly pull back immune suppression. If someone is very well matched at the molecular level, then you could say, okay, maybe we can take them, take their tacrolimus level down, or maybe take them off of the, two or three different agents they're on to just one. It has implications for, long-term lifetime cancer risk and infection risk. So, getting this better match would be beneficial, but also how do we keep that equality piece intact? And I think we're going to have to maybe rely on some economist and game theory and some of the other mathematical ways of maintaining fairness, but also maximizing our ability to do that molecular matching. And I think there's a few ideas on how that's going to pan out, but ultimately you know, it has to be something where you can say to someone, okay, would you like to wait 3 months longer and get a better organ? Probably. I think a lot of people would say, you know, yes, I would like to mm-hmm. wait 3 months or possibly 5 months, 6 months longer. And then after that time, we'll say, okay, we'll just, you know, then you get the next one that it is. We tried to get you a great match. We couldn't, and we're going to get the same match you would have got 6 months ago under the standards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all, you know, it's we're working on that, but it's still a little ways away.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's kind of changed, in this moment is we're getting better at crossing immunological barriers. So you may hear about the Willing to Cross program in your transplant journey for people who have who are highly sensitized. And that's that we've gotten pretty good at doing standard immunological risk transplants. We're being able to maximize the value of those. But for these people that just can't find that match, we're mm-hmm. finding ways, or we're looking at ways to identify which antibodies we can cross and would be a little bit higher immunological risk, but that would allow for a transplant to actually happen.
Interesting.
So this would be, these patients who are going to reject 99% of the donor population or higher,
yes.
maybe get them down to 98% or 97%, which, may seem like a small victory, but that is a big difference when it comes to, you would be able to get 1 in 5,000 transplants down to 1 in 1,000, or go from 1 in 1,000 down to 1 in 400, right? So, it takes it from being almost impossible to tangible. And it's
right. And that's an interesting group to talk to as well, because, when they know that they are highly sensitized, I find that, the patients that I talk to sometimes kind of like the wind goes out of their sails, right? Like, how am I going to find a donor? Now, often, sometimes as a patient or, somebody who doesn't know much about this field, we can kind of look at this as, science that's way, way over there. And, we don't quite grasp everything that's going on behind the scenes. And I'm wondering how is your team, the team at UHN, integrating this science and these innovations into like real time decisions? How does that actually look, when we pull back the Oz curtain? What does that look like, especially, when we're doing 900 solid organ transplants and 200 stem cell transplants, all of those procedures? That's a huge volume. So, kind of pull that curtain back. What does it look like when you're on the ground, in that room making those clinical decisions?
Yeah. So, for that Willing to Cross process that we're kind of, we've just started on, it's really a nice teamwork effort between the clinical program and the HLA lab. The HLA directors primarily are doing the work for this. So the clinical program will identify a patient that's been, highly sensitized and they've been on the wait list for, a significant period of time. Then they will then do a deeper dive to say, can this patient handle, possibly more intense immune suppression? Could they handle, ATG? Can they handle a higher dose of standard immune suppression? Are they relatively healthy? If the answer mm-hmm. is yes, that they could take they could take what's coming potentially, then they will send us that person's name, and then the directors, usually one director will take each patient, and we'll go through and we'll really go to task on the patient's antibody profile. So with some of these patients, that can mean 10, 15, 20 years even of data that we have to go through and look at the whole history. So it's a very time consuming process. Mm-hmm. We go through the history and we look and say, okay, maybe these antibodies haven't been present for 5 years. They're probably to a point where they're, the immunological risk is lower, not none, but it's definitely lower than it would be if they're currently circulating. So we can start with those and say, okay, would these be possible to cross? We can also, we have some other tools at our disposal. We do something called surrogate cross match, where we would take, an old serum if we're not sure about an antibody of how strong it would be or how it would behave in an actual situation where it's binding to the patient's cells, so the donor cells, then we would then be able to do some additional surrogate cross match where we take a, you know, a donor from our donor population, the cells, and mix them with the patient's serum and just look and see how they react. We can even take a serum from 10 years ago and put it on a donor and see how it would react. We have other tests that Dr. Wang, my colleague, Jin Wang, he developed to actually be able to do a little bit deeper understanding of how these antibodies bind and say, you know, is this antibody strong? Is it going to be binding to multiple sites? And you really get a good understanding of that antibody. If the answer is that, you know, this might be a lower immunological risk, then we can add that to the category of willing to cross. And when we're finished, you know, when that person, one individual director does the review, then the three of us will sit, Dr. Lenka Allen, Jin Wang, Wang, and I will sit, and we will kind of as a committee, we'll say, okay, you know, these are the potentials, and almost like a judge and jury, you know, then then the person presenting will say, oh, I suggest these, and then, you know, this was my reasoning, and then we'll look, the three of us will come together, and we'll say kind of with a consensus on if this is, you know, correct or not, and if we can proceed. Then there's a written document that gets made that will go into the program, into the organ transplant system. We'll put these possible crossing the antibodies to cross. And then when the person gets an offer, you know, it will be made aware before the program gets an offer that there's a willing to cross offer on the table. Have a quick look at it, where we will have another look to just make sure that this is kind of is what we said it was 6 months ago or a year ago when we came to this decision. And then we'll give it the thumbs up, and then we'll make the offer.
It's a lot for one patient, right?
Yeah, it is a lot of work. You know, when the program, you know, when they put these together, we really stress. We say, you know, make sure that you've done a lot of your work on your side to make sure these patients can handle this type of, because it is a lot of work, you know, and, you know, mm-hmm. we don't want to waste that, the time on getting this person ready and then saying, oh, wait, they, you know, they can't handle ATG anyway, so we wouldn't go with this person. The other stuff, the molecular matching, you know, that's a little bit further away. You know, we get asked a few times if we can, how we can integrate that. Not a lot of places in Canada are using that. So, but, you know, that not to say that we won't get there. It's just going to take some, work to get us there together as a program.
Interesting. So looking ahead, you know, often as patients, we think about, you know, what's coming? Are we printing organs? You know, looking at xenotransplant, all of these wild, wild science fiction that are turning sometimes reality. Thinking about moving towards a future where transplant matching is very highly personalized or even predictive, what could that mean for patients, for the field overall, and how would that look in the future?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, I think that, you know, as, you know, if we think of it as a system, as a, you know, as Ontario or as, you know, Canada, as a healthcare, mm-hmm. you know, I think this could lead to just better utilization of that valuable resource of organ donors. This mm-hmm. will be, you know, longer graft survival. You know, if a patient has a graft that lasts 20 years, then they're not going to need another organ sooner. So on the system, you know, fewer, you know, we'll have more organs available for everyone if they're lasting longer.
Right.
The immune suppression piece is also, you know, really important. If we can lower the necessary immune suppression for an individual, you know, lifetime cancer risk goes up with mm-hmm. immune suppression. Infection risk goes up with increased immune suppression. And, you know, that all plays into the overall quality and the life of that patient. Aside from, you know, in it, you know, it's tied to their transplant, but it's not exactly their transplant. So being able to live a longer, healthier, happier life is the goal of, you know, everything that we do in healthcare. So this is right at the crux of that is being able to offer that. You know, another thing that's not to be overlooked is the donor. There's a lot of work being done in organ preservation, which I haven't spoken about yet, but I think it's good to talk about that. Is there's, you know, the methods of, you may hear like normoxic organ preservation, where organs are being kept warm. The lung, mm-hmm. the lung ex vivo lung perfusion, where the lung team is able to take these lungs, put them onto a perfusion apparatus, and make them breathe for, you know, 8 to 10 hours. And improve over time. They can, you know, if they need to flush them with really strong antibiotics, they can, you know, get them fully hydrated. They can really pushed a lot of that kind of bad humors from the removal of the organ process, and then transplant them.
Amazing.
Other organs like heart and kidney are also being examined for organ preservation, perfusion, to be able to improve the quality. And then, you know, these organs that would have been investigated and said, oh, doesn't have the quality that we can use, they're not able to be used, maybe mm-hmm. they can use them. So being able to then increase the pool of these organs is also very important. So, you know, overall, having more mm-hmm. organs, you know, we're in the lab, we're kind of the rate limiting step or the bottleneck is organ supply, right, of these, all the programs.
Right.
So, you know, if we can open up that supply, then I think that a lot of people would really have a really great chance of getting organ faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, who I've spoken to on the podcast over the years, Dr. Seipel being one of them with the lung perfusion, and, you know, hearing from different angles, everything that's going on in the world of transplant to, you know, increase the number of organs, increase the viability of transplanting organs and having more organs that are usable. So like focusing on deceased organ donation, focusing on, you know, compatibility with living donors and all of these pieces that are coming together to try to make sure that we don't have the huge wait lists that we do in Ontario and in Canada, like really working as a team at UHN to, in all aspects of care, I guess, try to get these patients transplanted and then keep that organ for these 25 years, like we're talking about. I'm hitting 17 years in September, and I'm hoping I'm going to be, you know, an old lady in the kidney world with my organ, right, as we continue to go. But it's amazing to hear all of the pieces that kind of come together at UHN to try to get not just more organs, but then like viability of organs and longevity. And you mentioned quality of life. And sometimes we hear a lot about science and, you know, how to make sure these organ donations happen, but then making sure that, yeah, after it happens, that the patients have good quality of life and we're enjoying our lives and able to do all of these things. So it's really amazing to hear all of this incredible science that's happening, you know, like I said, like behind the wall of what a lot of patients see or do.
Yeah, no, and I, you know, in the HLA lab, we really have our finger in all of the transplant programs. So everyone, you know, comes to us and we have conversations. And, you know, you're saying there is great advances in all the programs for, you know, in lung and liver and heart and kidney. Everyone is pushing the boundaries. And it's really great to see and be a part of that, you know, being able to be involved in that, to varying degrees. It really feels great to be able to help that. And also to kind of, you know, being able to work with them together as well and put them, you know, mm-hmm. you can say, oh, you know, have you spoken, you know, if I see someone is having an issue and say, oh, you know, I know that the heart team dealt with that same thing 6 months ago, then I'll say, oh, you know, talk to the heart team. They had a similar problem. Maybe they might have some expertise.
Amazing.
Or like our, the other way is our lung program is, you know, the world leader in crossing immunological barriers. So they have, you know,
right.
vast experience, more than anyone else on the planet, on how to deal with these immunologic transplants. So now as the heart and the lung, kidney team and the pancreas team kind of start to increase their immunological risk, it's great to say, oh, you know, go talk to Megan Aversa or go talk to you know, Marcelo about, you know, about what they did or how they tackled this. So having that kind of institutional knowledge is very, very valuable. And we're lucky, I think, to have that.
Amazing. Now I'm wondering, you know, as somebody who does not have the background in science or understanding of all of these cool things that happen, if I were to, you know, plunk myself down in the HLA lab for a day and kind of watch this work happen, what do you think would surprise me the most about what goes on in there?
Well, first thing is you'd have to get there early. We tend to start very, very early because a lot of transplant activity happens in the night. So right. The earlier we can get at it, you know, the lab is fully humming by 7 a.m., you know, sometimes a little sooner, you know, we're working like at full force by 7:30. But it's a very fast paced environment with tight timelines and high expectations. The phone's always ringing with, from the province or from the program, you know, asking for things. But by no means is it a stressful environment. You know, I think everyone really handles the pressure well. Everyone mm-hmm. works together, helps each other out. If there's something that really needs to get done quickly, you know, I have a team of 18 fantastic MLTs and MLAs and supervisors. Everyone kind of pulls together to just get it done. So, you know, it's a very, you know, it's really great to see just that everyone just works so hard to get, they know the job is what needs to be done and everyone gets it done. So, so you wouldn't know, you know, that you wouldn't, you know, not like we're running around and yelling with our chickens, with our heads cut off. You know, everyone is very professional and, you know, it does get sometimes a little bit heat, high pressure, but that usually happens in the night, with the MLT on call and the drifter. It gets a little bit more stressful, but no, we're professionals. We can handle it and we're trained for it. So
amazing. That's very cool. Now, at the end of the day, you know, we've talked a lot about the science and we know a lot of the data. What impact do you hope overall that this work has on a patient level, on a family level, waiting for that life-changing organ that is going to come through?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think that being able to, you know, to get that to happen, just being able to mm-hmm. be involved in the process, you know, is amazing for me. You know, it's very fulfilling. Being able to get that person the best organ for them, you know, with the highest quality, the fastest that we can get it, that could help their overall health and help them, you know, really in their post-transplant journey. You know, if we make sure that it starts off on the right foot, and say, you know, we've done everything in our power to make sure this is the best organ for this person at this time. And then that will play forward into the post-transplant journey and the rest of their life and hopefully a long, happy graft and life.
Amazing. Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you think our listeners might want to know?
I think that the one thing I'm incredibly proud of is the MLTs that I work with. They have, you know, they're the best, you know, the HLA lab, you know, I have a biased opinion, but in my opinion, they're the best of the best, you know, and I don't think that MLTs get a lot, you know, because they're also a lot of times behind the scenes, you know, patients a lot mm-hmm. of times see the nurses, the coordinators, the, you know, education professionals like yourself, you know, they get a lot of face time, but the MLTs don't see the patients. They don't get a lot of recognition. And I think, you know, they, you know, LNP, you know, we have hundreds of MLTs all working in their various labs and in core lab and blood bank and molecular genetics flow lab. So, and I think that, you know, they're really, you know, if you ever meet one or get a chance to interact with one or see one, you know, they're really a big part of this hospital and what makes us number two in Canada. So thank them for their work. You know, I my job is easy because they're all so great and they, you know, make it really easy for me to do what I do because they have done such a good job for the data and the integrity of the work before it gets to my hands. So that's important.
Amazing. Well, thank you for everything that you and your team do and continue to do in and out in those pressure cooker situations. All of us patients are very grateful for knowing that there are so many hands working so hard behind the scenes and making sure we get the best quality organs that we can and the best match for sure to hopefully last us a very, very long, healthy life. And yes, I really sure. appreciate you coming on the podcast today. We're really grateful.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. It's great to, like I said, HLA people, we'll talk for days about HLA. So I'm happy to enlighten you and your listeners.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Okay, thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Living Transplant Podcast. If you did, please rate, leave us a review, and share with your friends. Don't forget to subscribe to Living Transplant wherever you're listening today. If you have any ideas for podcast episodes, please reach out to us at livingorgandonation@uhn.ca. For information about living organ donation, you can visit us at www.livingorgandonation.ca. Special thanks to Bespoke Productions for editing this episode and for production support. I'm your host, Candace Coughlin. Thanks for spending your time with us.